Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free, year-round fundraising program for schools. You can learn more at schoolspiritvending.com.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer.
And today's show, I speak with Glenn Robbins, school leader extraordinaire. I am just so impressed after talking to this guy, and folks are really lucky to have him in the district. He's a new superintendent, and it's fun hearing from him, like what that shift was like from principal to superintendent. And we talk about a number of interesting things, like check your ego at the door, that together is better, and the innovative ways to use technology within our classrooms. You're really going to enjoy this show. I do not take it for granted that you're listening. Thank you so much and enjoy the show. Well, hey there, Better Leaders. I'm with a school leader powerhouse, Glenn Robbins, who's the proud superintendent at the Tabernacle Township School District. His passion is harnessing a school culture that thrives on design thinking skills, innovative digital spaces, BYOD one-to-one, and maker spaces. In addition, Glenn encourages all students to have a voice, not only in building a school culture, but also in designing student-led courses. He was named as a 2016 Digital Principal of the Year by NASSP for exhibiting bold creative leadership in his drive to harness the potential of new technologies to further learning goals for staff, students, and the school community. Glenn led his former school to become the first school in New Jersey history to receive the 2016 SETDA Student Voices Award, which honors an outstanding K-12 school or district that has leveraged technology to dramatically improve the ed experiences and achievement of their students. Glenn has been recognized by numerous organizations for his innovative technology implementation methods and has been a featured speaker at numerous events across the globe. His extensive travels to various schools across the globe have helped to diversify his views on education and implement new instructional methods to better both students and staff. By empowering students and staff to have growth mindset through design thinking while implementing digital tools, we can better prepare them to be agile, flexible, and adaptive towards the profound shifts they will encounter in life. Glenn, so excited to have you on the show.
Likewise, thank you for having me.
Glenn, what inspired you to pursue a career in education?
You know, I was thinking about that question in regards to it, and I think I have to look back to when I was in high school, and I had a couple teachers that really stood out, that were empathetic. They understood what kids were about, and they were passionate about the history being taught. And at that time, history was somewhat of a passion of mine. And then I started coaching, and I was working some soccer camps and so forth, and you know, seeing the impact that I could have and what I was learning by also teaching these younger kids had a profound effect on me. And from that point on, I went home and said, hey, mom and dad, I think I really want to get into the education business.
And what was their response like?
You know what? My parents were very excited by that fact. My father is a third generation water well driller. So I remember when I was a young kid, my mother and he drove down to Texas, picked up a oil drilling rig and brought it back up to New Jersey. And from there, you know, continued with his business. And I worked with him for many years. My best friend growing up was a shovel. I hate to say that, but it's the truth. And I learned what hard manual labor was. And, you know, so when I came home, I said, I want to pursue a career in education. My father pushed me even harder to go to school, to get better grades and appreciate a solid education instead of working in the field every single day, whether it was 32 degrees out or, you know, 105 degrees out on the back of a well rig. So they were quite excited that I wanted to take that jump into a different profession than what he had chosen.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think most families is either going to be a hell yes or a hell no when their kid says they want to go into education. Like, I'm so proud of you. Or what? Are you crazy? That's good stuff. That's good stuff. Glenn, how would you describe your leadership style and how'd you develop it?
I think my leadership style has definitely evolved throughout the years. One, I would have to say is I try to be original. You know, some of my friends say you're sort of like the renegade. And, you know, what I mean by that is I try to do things differently than what I learned throughout my years in education. And I look at it from the lens of how could we work together? You know, so many times in the teaching field and as a coach and as an assistant principal, As a principal, you hear so many other educators talk about the light side versus the dark side. You know, once you cross over to the dark side, you know, they don't want to talk to you anymore, and you have to remain separated, and you have to, you know, hold a firm line. And I look at it in a completely different lens that, you know, if we're going to really make a difference in a school, we have to work together. It has to be our school. It can't be mine. It can't be theirs. You know, and it can't just be the students. It has to be our school. So my leadership style is having an empathetic approach towards my union leadership and having a collaborative relationship with those union leaders, as well as any other type of leaders in the education field, the students and the parents in the community. I like to put myself out there. Obviously, I'm transparent in today's society in 2017. I think you really need to be. But I understand where people are coming from. And that's the biggest thing. I have to focus on my staff. And in order for my staff to get better, I need to focus on them. And in order for my kids to get better, I need to focus on that staff. And I think too often that leaders look at the current test scores and they want data right away, where I'm more intrigued about what can I do to better the lives of the individuals around me and what are the long-term goals and what are the long-term results that will come from that. You know, because like I said, too often we're too heavily pushed into mandates and current data right now instead of looking at the whole teacher or the whole child. And what can we do to truly make a difference in moving forward with them? And lastly, looking at, you know, we talk about model school practices or, you know, best practices. I think you really have to evaluate that and say, do they even work in your school? You know, and I see people like to just copycat or steal the idea down the street because the other school's doing it. We have to do it. You know, I'm a firm believer in looking at what our community is and then trying to adjust it and breaking it down from there. And, you know, and then asking my staff and asking my administrative staff, what's the experience you're trying to create for our students? And then from there, we can move forward. So, like I said, I like to do a lot of the hands-on, but I love to have conversations with all involved instead of just a top driven down.
So important. And, you know, we get caught up on the test scores. It can be very frustrating, you know, as a school leader, because that's just one aspect, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You need multiple modes of evaluating a school and how effective it is. And it's very clear to me, you know, just talking to you now for 7 minutes or so, you're people person first. And you want to build up those folks and add value to their lives. I'm curious, what are some of the strategies? What are some of the ways that you actually make that happen, a reality in your district?
You know, it's a unique situation. I'm new to Tabernacle since November. But the unique aspect about that is I actually was born and raised in the area. I had a lot of aunts and uncles and friends and grandparents that lived in that town, but I lived in the town next door. And, you know, so when I came into that position, like I came into my previous positions as a principal, I immediately tried to sit down and I immediately tried to reach out to all the different teachers and to reach out to all the different kids and have those, you know, interpersonal conversations face to face. One of the first things I did was I went to the union leadership and said, hey, you know, by the way, this is happening right now and I'd like to keep you informed to try to build that trust and authentic relationship. You know, the following day, my second day on the job, I went to them and said, just by heads up, by the way, I'm going to walk around to every single classroom just to observe and just to see who our kids are and who our staff are. And, you know, to see, you know, why there are such great things going on in this district and how I can help improve that. So, you know, it's having those conversations. And then the biggest thing is building that culture takes time. So you have to build climate every single day. And, you know, you have to try to destroy some older mentalities and fixed mindsets. And you have to try to change that groupthink mentality as well, because, you know, groupthink turns into a group culture and then group culture turns into something that you can barely change. So for me, it was, you know, having those face-to-face conversations, being or trying to be emotionally intelligent as to what's going on with the people's lives. And, you know, understanding that people do have bad days and we all have to do a responsibility of giving our best work to our kids. But, you know, if people feel respected and people know that they can come to you because something's happening at home and they can share that with you, and you can build on that together. You know, there's nothing worse than a teacher trying to do something in a school and feeling the immense pressure from administrative staff unless they have support. You know, so if you have the pressure and the support together, that means we're doing it together. We're with each other. But if I'm just pressuring you and I don't care about, you know, that if someone passed away last week or your kid's sick, whatever, then what good am I really doing? And how am I really going to empower that person to move forward and make a real difference in my kid's lives?
It's refreshing to hear you mention that because, you know, being a principal, I think least my experience, AP principal, shoot, school leader, and I'm sure it's above me too, superintendents and whatever your Harvard district is designed, structured, it could be a very lonely job. And so if you're just motivating by pressure, by directives and those kind of things, and not sitting down and saying, how can we win this together, right? This idea of in it to win it. I just don't see how you can accomplish as much as you could in a collaborative sense. Mm-hmm. And so, like I said, refreshing to hear that. I'm curious about how leaders create climate. You said every day, and you mentioned having a high emotional intelligence, building relationships. I love this. Understand that people have bad days and learn how to respect. Is there anything else that you would add to that in terms of creating climate every day?
Yeah, you know, one last thing, which is a big one, and it's hard for a lot of leaders and anybody particularly to do in today's generation, is check your ego at the door. You know, there is, we live in a unique, complex society today. And, you know, we have to be in, like we mentioned earlier, together is better. And, you know, building that team is so crucial. But if you walk in all egotistical, you know, and you're wearing a suit and you're pressing the suit, to go to say, you know, it does not set a very good role or a very good model for staff to follow. You know, so for me, I walk in every day, I check my ego at the door. To the fact that I've actually been asked when I was a principal before, hey, are you one of the teachers here? Or are you, you know, are you the assistant principal? Yeah. Because I have my sleeves rolled up.
Oh, yeah.
My necktie is slightly loosened up. And I don't play the role or don't look the role sometimes as an administrator, as a lead person in the district, because I have no problem getting dirty and busy with my teachers and kids to get stuff done. You know, so for me, like I said, checking that ego at the door is so crucial, because, you know, we have to work together, and it's not, hey, look at me, check me out the whole time. It should be, look at us and check us out.
No, that's so good. I love that you roll up the sleeves and loosen the tie. I remember a small group through my church, the leader's name was Gino. We'd go over to this shelter and we'd put on a Christmas show, and we did dinners there on a regular basis. And another way we'd serve is also clean. And he always would pick me to go with him and clean the toilets, right? Of transitional center. And let's just say, you know, it's not the, you know, cleanest place to clean, right? You know, just yep, even being. Yep. And, but he was slowly checking my ego, right? And helping me become a humble servant. And that lesson stuck, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily cleaning bathrooms today at my school, but a few parents have written me, and I do the, we lost our crossing guard. He retired. Okay. And so I stepped in instead of making it. I could make any teacher do it if I wanted to. I could make anybody do it. I'm the principal.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you know what? I wanted to do it. It'd be a great way to connect with kids, wave goodbye to all the parents driving home. And I've been doing that now for maybe about a month consistently. And the emails have come in, and they said that says a lot about you, your leadership. And so I think that helps. This is my long way of asking you, is there anything you do besides, I guess, rolling up the sleeves, loosening the tie and getting dirty? Like, do you say anything to yourself in the mirror, or like, how does Glenn check his ego at the door?
You know, I've worn mascot outfits many times. I've served lunches where the little kids look at me and go, why are you here? You know, especially first or second graders are
right,
completely confused by that. But I think, you know, when you look yourself in the mirror and you look yourself in a reflection, whether you're writing something or typing something, I just look about and think about how I wished I had better leaders when I was growing up, and how I wish I had teachers that, you know, I could try to model off of, you know, and I look at that, and I had a few, but, you know, I always say to myself, be the leader that you always wish you had, and be the leader that you always, somebody else wishes they had. And that's the way I look at it. So, you know, I'm outside shoveling snow on snow days. I remember years ago as an assistant principal, one of the toilets came bubbling up. And, you know, while everybody else is freaking out, I threw on a pair of slacks with the janitors and helped mop up the floor. I didn't care what was on the floor. I wanted it clean for my kids. So for me, I think that's the background of hard manual labor, is making me appreciate what hard work is and what people do every single day, you know, out in the field. And, you know, you need to respect that and think that life could be 10 times worse or 10 times better. And, you know, you have to appreciate the day every day. But ultimately, you know, when you show a kid that you care about them, or you show a staff member, or you show a parent like you're doing with the crossing guard, it means you're there and every single day. They respect that more than anything else, you know, and that makes you you. It doesn't matter what you win or what you've done before. The fact that you're out there as a crossing guard says, hey, I care more about these kids than you realize, and I want to be out there every single day to help out. And you know it. You know, you might be the only smile that they get that day. You might be the only hello or how are you that they get that day. So you're making a tremendous difference, and those parents see it.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, hearing about you, man, there's Glenn, there's so many incredible aspects that you bring to the table from a leadership standpoint. A lot of things I admire, but I want to challenge you here. You know, what are some of the mistakes you've made, right? What would you consider your worst leadership mistake, and what'd you learn from it?
That's a whole separate podcast, I think. to be honest with you, I am far from perfect, and nor will I ever be. I strive to be better each day, but I've made a lot of mistakes over my lifetime, whether it was from coaching, whether it was from teaching, whether it was from administrative roles. And I think some of the mistakes that I made was when I was younger. I guess I was just so eager. You know, I became an assistant principal at 27. I became a principal at 32. And, you know, I look back at like some of the decisions I had to make, and some of the decisions I had to make came from above, and I never questioned. I never said, hey, why are we doing this when I should have? You know, I mentioned on one podcast before about how a teacher came up to me and said, hey, would you mind if you could get coverage for me for 15 minutes so I could watch my daughter walk into kindergarten? It's in the same building. And I remember getting a directive saying I had to tell her no. And that infuriated me. I should have went back and said, you know what? I'll cover your class. I'll do that for you. You know, and that took a while to win that teacher back over. And now we're good friends, and I miss working with her dearly. But that taught me something, you know, that, like I said, that's an interpersonal skills. That's something where you really build up some real capacity with your staff. And I shot myself in the foot. And then there was another time when I was even younger as an assistant principal. You know, I was told to go write up a teacher. And I was completely shocked by this because it was a beloved teacher who was doing a great thing. And it wasn't really her fault. You know, but the principal wanted to have something against her, and I had to go write it up, you know. And I remember looking at that teacher saying, I'm so sorry, but I have to do this. I'm being told to do that. And I think at that time, I was just being too stupid or too naive, or just, you know, not looking at the whole picture. I was looking out for the betterment of myself to keeping a job,
yeah.
You know, what I could have done the right thing and stood up to somebody and said, this isn't right. If this is your way, then you do it yourself. You know, I didn't have the knowledge. I didn't have the guts. I didn't have the understanding of what I was trying to achieve at that time in my life. You know, so, you know, I learn every day from my mistakes, whether it's something small or big, to try to be better each and every day. But those things linger on me, you know, when I look back. And then, you know, as a teacher, I worked in a pretty diverse neighborhood of school. And some of the stories the kids would tell me about, you know, how they were abused, or how many almost overdosed, or how they were being sexually abused by, you know, stepfathers and so forth, it ate at me that I couldn't help them more. You know, so I look back at that saying, what could I have done differently to better that kid's life when he or she came to me, instead of just, you know, not truly understanding what was going on? You know, not to say I didn't get him help or anything,
sure.
You know, it just eats at you as an individual, you know, even to this day, years later, that saying, could I have done something differently? And, you know, you got the police involved, you get the prosecutors involved and all that, obviously, and the mental health, but it always weighs on you. You know, could I have done something, one more thing to help that kid out? You know, so those are just some of the things I look back at. I think it's more of the human side, the human aspect, the psychological aspects that I struggle with. And that's why I really focus on that really hard nowadays to move forward.
Wow. Thanks for being vulnerable with the listeners. Those are some profound insights that you shared there, and reflecting on, you know, what you can do better. You really took us on a nice journey there. Today's show is brought to you by School Spirit Vending. School Spirit Vending has a hassle-free, year-round fundraising program for schools, and the best part is that it's absolutely free. With School Spirit Vending, we do all the work, you just cash a check. You can increase school spirit with custom stickers for your school and raise funds at the same time, no upfront costs, no volunteers, no selling. Sick of the same old ways of raising money for your school? Check out SchoolSpiritVending.com. Glenn, what does the first hour of your day look like? Do you have any type of morning routine or ritual?
I have a four-year-old son, so it's whatever he wants to do.
What does he like to do? What typically does he like to do?
He loves to wake up at like 5 a.m. and say, Daddy, let's go play.
Yep.
So, you know, for me, it's waking up, getting ready. He's starting to realize that he needs to start getting ready for school as well. So we get ready together, and then I head to work, and then his mommy takes care of the rest, obviously putting him on the bus and all. But pretty much every day I'll wake up, I'll be honest with you. I thank the good Lord that I have an awesome life and a great wife and a great child. You know, first and foremost, to appreciate that. And then, you know, I'll try to find like a motivational quote or a daily stoic of some sort. I've been reading Ryan Holiday a lot lately. So I've tried to look up the day and, you know, read what the advice might be from one of the ancient philosophers. And then, you know, try to break it down from there. Obviously, then from there, I'm looking over my calendar for the day. And once I get into the school building, I try to get outside for the bus's arrival. Even as a superintendent, I try to be out there. Not always the easiest, but I try my darnest, especially after late nights the night before. And then from there, I like to be out in the hallways. My secretary knows that I hate being cooped up in my office. So I love being in the hallways. I love being in the learning studios and, you know, interacting with kids and talking to parents and talking to teachers. You know, the paperwork can always wait, but you know, that's pretty much my first hour of the day is once I get there and really starting to hit the ground running and do some great things with them.
So Ryan Holiday, you just said in two episodes ago, I had John Harper on. He has a podcast called My Bad.
Yep.
And he introduced me to The Obstacle is the Way. Have you read that book?
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I think I mentioned it to Harper. So that might have been the reason why he passed it to you.
Okay. So. That might be. So I've been going through some tough stuff, if I could be real. I can't talk about it on the show, but mm-hmm. I picked up that book because I wanted to have some tools with how to deal with challenges, and it's awesome.
Yes, and I got the book. I just remember blessing it out all over Twitter, and I remember John and quite a few others reached out to me saying, all right, I guess I need to read this, and I said it will be one of the best reads you've read in a long time, and obviously it resonated with you too, you know. But
in a big, big way.
I look at that, and I say, man, I wish I would have had that book 5-6 years ago because it was such a powerful read for me. And then from there, I'm not sure if you read it, but I really love Ego is the Enemy that he also wrote. It's another fantastic read. And then obviously he just put out the Daily Stoic, but Ego is the Enemy is just equally as good as The Obstacle is the Way.
I'm going to have to check that one out next. Amazon right after this podcast gets hung up. Great. Tell me the story of how you use technology in innovative ways.
All right, technology in innovative ways. So I look at it from the lens of a father, you know, and I have a four-year-old son. And when he was born, it completely revolutionized my thoughts of what school could be. Now, before that, I was quite innovative. I was trying to get, you know, kids who doing different type of technology projects and so forth. But once he was born, it really opened my eyes and started saying to myself, what is school going to be like when he's in college? And besides the dreaded question, what's it going to cost, you know, 15, 18 years from now? But my thought was, what is it going to be like? And as we move forward, I often wonder, as his 4-year-old, which is equal to my pre-K classes that I have in my school, my kindergarten classes, will they ever drive a car? You know, and when are they going to start using artificial intelligence in the classrooms? And you know, are we really preparing these kids for these major profound shifts coming their way with the necessary soft skills that they're going to need to have conversations instead of answering a question A, B, C, or D from a standardized test? So with technology, the way I look at it, and I was blessed to work with so many great teachers, but we looked at it from a lens of how could we use, you know, design thinking to basically unschool these kids? And how could we utilize technology to better the lives of other children and better the lives of other adults? So one of the things we did in the past was my former eighth grade class was working with 3D prosthetic hand through the Enable Challenge. So we were sending different 3D arms to Ukraine, the UK, and a couple of places in America. The seventh grade class linked up with Thomas Jefferson University, Dr. Pugliese and Dr. Van Koo, two amazing individuals at the medical center over at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia, where our seventh grade kid designed for the pediatric unit. So it was kid designing for kid to try to make the pediatric unit less scary. And it came up with such amazing ideas. Sixth grade, worked with a teacher that had MS. So they were printing up different floor plans on which way she could get around the building with a wheelchair and service dog. They were printing up 3D printed objects and so forth to assist her with her wheelchair. We had a fifth grader who wore hearing aids, who were trying to put on a hockey helmet, and it wouldn't always work. So how could we better his life? And then from there, we started talking about in our classes. So what are we doing in our classes? Are we allowing our kids to use their phones, or are we making them sit and stare and be consumables on a laptop? You know, I think that's like the new fad. Everybody's like, "Oh, we got 1-to-1, and look at us." And you go into a room, and the kids are just staring at a screen. You know, that's worthless. That's like an electronic worksheet, which everybody says. You know, so my question then became is, how can we make this production? How can we make this entrepreneurial? How can we make this to a fact that the kids don't even realize how many standards they're going to cover, but we get them to do it? You know, so we started saying, hey, why don't you start broadcasting out and start recording yourselves, you know, on projects that you're working on? And how is it making a difference in someone else's life? Forget you. How are you making a difference in somebody else's life? You know, and record that and share it with an authentic audience and blog about it. You know, so when we started getting these kids to produce for individuals that were not their teachers and they're producing for the world, they put in twice as amount or three times the amount of work into those projects. And unique thing is some of those classes were ungraded, but yet in those classes, they did, you know, so much more work and so much dedication. And they did homework when they didn't even have homework, you know, because they wanted to prove to the world that they had something good for the betterment of society, you know. So now as I jump into a new school, you know, we're starting to do the same thing. They just went 1-to-1. So looking at it now is, what can we do to better the lives of others? So we have this beautiful iSTEM shop that is massive, where the kids are getting their engineering and so forth and thinking about how they can do things differently. And, you know, I'm looking at it from the educational lens of the elementary school too. So what are we doing with elementary kids? Because I got a 4-year-old who can work my iPhone 7S Plus better than I can. So, why do they have to wait till their middle school? Or why do they have to wait till high school? Why can't we give them the tools and the accessibility now? So, you know, if I can give a kid any type of device or any type of resource and let them show me to produce instead of me telling them what to do, you know, their minds run crazy. And the biggest thing is I've just given them trust and respect with an electronic device or some kind of technology that most people don't give them. And when I say, yeah, I trust you, I respect you, now show me what you can do and make any project you want, you know, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, sky's the limit. I love that. That is innovative. That's something new that I've heard, and I really appreciate you sharing that. Can you describe the shift moving from principal to superintendent? What's that been like for you?
It has been awesome, to be honest with you.
Good.
I wanted a challenge. I wanted a new challenge. And it's been unique for me. Like I said, to me, to go back to my hometown, where, you know, my childhood area, has been somewhat surreal. And one of the bigger challenges is seeing people for like the first time in like 15 years that I haven't seen since I moved away. So it's getting back to knowing them again. But it's like anything else. When you go into a new position, you're starting all over again. You're learning who the people are again. You're learning who the kids are again. And you're trying to understand, you know, what makes the current culture the way it is and how can you better their lives without fully throwing a wrench into everything, you know, and appreciating what they've done and how hard they work where they are and how can you better them to move forward. So, you know, I'm fortunate to the fact that I have a great board right now that want to do some great things as us as we move forward. And we respect each other and we understand that we're trying to do what's best for the kids. And I've been fortunate enough to jump in with the administrative team as well and the teachers. So yeah, I guess the biggest thing is just a couple extra meetings at night, a couple extra things of paperwork, but just like very much being a principal, your overall job is to make sure that your kids and your parents and your staff and your community get the best education that you can provide them. And you're responsible so heartedly for that to be overseeing on everything. And that, you know, if anything, you just take it a different realm. You just open up your eyes to a couple other levels as far as like fiscal responsibility for the entire district, not just your building anymore, you know, and you're looking at it from the busing standpoint and you're looking at it from, are you working with town hall? You know, I've been very blessed that I've established a great relationship right away with the mayor and the city council. So I think, working together, like I mentioned earlier, is a huge push for us. And we're trying to do great things for the community, be fiscally responsible and understanding that, there's many different lives going on in town, and we need to make our school as somewhat of a center, as a community center. And that's one of my goals right now, is to really bring that back. Instead of looking at it as a school, I want to look at it like a place of pride every single day for the whole entire community.
Love it. That's really interesting what you're talking about there. I'm glad I'm not in those shoes yet. But it sounds like you're handling it really well. You're the right guy for the job. So you've got great vision for technology and how to use that in innovative ways. And I love asking my guests, if there was a class they could add to the schools that's not currently taught, what would be that class that you would add?
I don't know if it would necessarily be a class, because, you look at it, each school, depending on where you are in different parts of the regions of the United States, does something different. So I look at it from the overall aspect of what is the overall experience that we want our kids to experience, and what is the overall experience we want our kids to, our staff to experience. So for me, I'm looking at it from a couple different lenses, and I'm looking at, ultimately, how can we better prepare our kids and our staff to give them the proper resources to move forward, to teach them how to continue to work on their soft skills, and how can they continue to look at building up your self-esteem and having a growth mindset. One of the courses that we added at the elementary school was mindfulness, and trying to get kids to, and staff to, take a deep breath every once in a while and to focus on, the now and understand what's going on with their body and to help themselves out to cope. Because, as we move forward, these kids are getting more and more frustrated. So I look at that. I look at, are they having the interpersonal skills, like I mentioned with the soft skills? And ultimately, do they have, what's your school doing? Is it design thinking? Is it project-based learning? Or is it worksheets? Or is it, your one-to-one, but now it's just an electronic worksheet? So I look at it like trying to, in a way, creating a creative confidence amongst the kids, and almost like, if the course could be anything, changing up the grading. Why does it always have to be A, B, C, D? Why can't it be standard based? It's at certain grade levels, if not more. Why do we have, homework, or why don't we have homework, in some courses? And ultimately, how can we get the kids thinking about what could be differently and taking risk? And that's one of the things, is they grow up from elementary all the way up to 12 and into college, they take less risk. They ask, less questions, because they get so involved in this traditional silo of, I need to get a good grade, so I can go to a good school, and to my mom to put me on Facebook and look all cool to her friend because I'm a great kid, instead of thinking about, there's this problem going on. How can I fix that? And how can I work on that and have a couple different iterations? Because true learning is messy and true learning takes mistakes, instead of being just, sorry, you got, 15 questions wrong and you got an F or a B, whatever it may be on your grading scale. That does nothing. But if you can tell a kid, hey, I want you to take many iterations as you can to try to figure something out, that's what I'd love to see. And nothing drives me more insane than when a teacher says, all right, you have to hand in your homework tomorrow or it's a zero, or you can't take this test again because I'm preparing you for the real world in high school. Well, we all know that's gibberish, because of the fact that, you can retake your bar exam, SATs, your car exam, car driver's test a million times, and then you can eventually get there. So, I just look at that from that lens and so many different angles on how we could redo the overall structure of many different courses instead of just one or two adding on.
Gibberish is a nice way of putting it, Glenn. but you're right. You're right. And I wonder what it is, right? And I don't know if it's some type of psychology of control and power that staff sometimes has, or why we're so tied to tradition. And you're talking about grades, and that you got to get this zero. You can't. There's no second chances. But show me, like you said, driver's ed. I mean, you could come up with a million examples of when you get multiple opportunities to be successful. But why do you think it is that folks use that argument so much?
Honestly, I think it's all they've ever known. Bernard Roth from the Stanford D School, such a brilliant man. And one of his quotes, just paraphrasing, was, even in academia, we are all second-rate replicas. So, when you think back about that, you think about what you learned in the classroom from your teacher and what you learned from your mentors. And if that's all they've ever done, and you were hesitant to go out to, to many other businesses and schools, you're going to do the same thing that you were taught. And, so you have to question, what are we doing to expose our teachers and our administrative staff to get out there, not only to school, but also to businesses and also to ed tech businesses and so forth? What are they doing differently? You know, and, you know, why can't we give them that support? You know, one of the teachers the other day said, you know, and it was great for me as a learning experience because I'm trying to figure out my new staff still. Was, you know, I don't know sometimes when a principal or an admin walks in my room, if a kid's in a corner on the floor typing on a computer, should he be sitting in a chair instead and typing? You know, so I often think back and I apologize for, you know, some of the previous administration that these people have gone through. And yeah, I'm sure you probably have too, you know, that micromanage that, you know, rule with an iron fist and tell you this is the way it has to be done instead of giving these people the trust, freedom, and autonomy to be original, you know, to explore new different ways, to explore different professional development instead of the traditional ones they've always gotten, you know. And that's I think that's one of the things that I look at is like, how can we, you know, push these teachers to feel more respected, to try something new? Because, you know, if you don't feel respected and you don't have that freedom to be, you know, for the autonomy, you're not going to do anything different. You're going to go in there and be complacent and you're going to do the same thing over and over again because it doesn't ruffle any feathers and you can keep a job and you get your paycheck, you know, because the ones that are willing to stand up and do things differently, the kids will love, but to the average administrator, they'll probably hate you because, you know, you're standing on a desk or you rolled up your sleeves or one of my favorites was, you know, write up teachers that their blinds are crooked on the side of their windows. And I'm like, what does that have to do with learning?
Yeah,
so, you know,
exactly.
these people have unfortunately been beaten over the head. It's like one of those, you know, funny posters you always see. The beatings will continue until the morale improves.
Right.
I often think about that from, you know, previous leadership that we had. And this is unfortunately what these people had to go through. And it's almost like brainwashed in a way. And you have to unschool them too.
Well, those are good points. And yeah, I don't know what it is, that tradition and getting focused on the wrong things, but it matters about, you know, student achievement and the type of human beings you're producing in the community. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of a segue there in terms of stuff that, you know, you need to shift on concerning school leadership. What have you changed your mind about in the past few years?
I think one of the things was changed my mind in reference to that. You know, I had a interim superintendent for the last 2 years before I took a new job as a superintendent myself that really showed me the ways of being more personable. And what I mean by that, he would dress down so many different days. And I'm like, are you the superintendent of schools or are you going to a Jimmy Buffett concert? You know, and he would come in dressed down and he would, you know, it made the staff feel relaxed. You know, I'll never forget going to a workshop out on the West Coast at a prestigious university. And I was all excited to see this dean of education speak. And he dressed like he just got off the beach. You know, and I was just like, wow, this is a different type of thought process for me. So, you know, I started to be more human. I started to be, you know, try to be like a regular guy, but obviously understanding my leadership needs that my staff needed, obviously, by, you know, holding people accountable and supporting them and pushing them forward. But at the same time, you know, I started dressing down more. You know, I'll never forget the first time 3 years ago, I used to wear suits all the time, and I still do a lot, depending on the day. But one time I wore jeans because he made me, and I came. He called me on the radio, said, you need to come down to the cafeteria right away. You know, there's a big fight going on. And I come sprinting downstairs. And of course, all the kids are standing up and cheering for me because I had jeans on that day. So for me, it was just looking at it like, okay, if the staff respects you for the intellectual being that you are, and the staff respects you for holding people accountable, you know, and trying to better the kids and better the community, and they see your hard work, you know what, then they're going to respect you no matter what you're wearing. You know, as long as you're not dressed like a slob, they're going to respect you for the fact that you're part of them, you know, and you're willing to do a dress down day with them, and you're willing to wear a t-shirt day with them instead of, you know, hey, look at me and my tie. That means I'm the boss and they're all the, you know, the minions of mine, you know. So I think that goes a long way to some people saying we're here together instead of me versus you, you know, dark side versus the light side.
You know, we're talking about that leadership image too. So I'm curious, when you think of the word leader, who's the first person that comes to mind?
Ooh, that's an awesome question.
Thank you.
I have, you know, when I think of leader, I think of so many different things. And I think of a lot of teacher friends of mine that, you know, are leaders. I think of a lot of people in the business world that are leaders. You know, if I had to name like professionals or celebrities, some person I always looked at as a true leader was Theo Epstein, you know, the president of baseball management at the Cubs. And I was obviously being a huge Red Sox fan when he was hired at 27 years old. You know, I was like, oh, there's a young guy that's given a chance. What can he do? And he seized it. You know, so, and from there, you know, I looked at another basketball coach, which was Billy Donovan, you know, down in the University of Florida, a young guy getting an opportunity, but they had these pillars. They had these ways about them that people respected, and they had a vision and a mission that they wanted to move forward with and said, this is how we're going to build a championship team. So, you know, like I look at Theo today and I look at, you know, how many years of two curses did he break?
Right.
It's simply unreal. You know, so how many people can say that? Yeah. You know, I broke two major curses. But, you know, like I said, when you get back to it, every single person I look at in my eyes is a leader, whether they realize it or not. It's just whether or not they want to truly display it and understand that, you know. So I even look at the kids in my building as leaders because they've taught me so many different things over the years. And I've said that many times where, you know, that you mentioned earlier, the Digital Principal Award, you know, the kids are the ones to teach me all the time. The kids are the ones that I'll call down and say, hey, can you help me with this and show me something new? You know, so, you know, every person brings something to the table. And, you know, anyone is open-minded to say, hey, I want to learn something from you. Is a leader in my mind.
You know, I've really enjoyed this podcast. I think your people are super lucky to have you. So I was going to tell you that offline, but I'm going to tell you that in the recording because this has been a treat.
Thank you.
No problem. So you talked about Ego's Enemy, Obstacles Away. What would be one book every principal should read right now and why?
Ooh, just one?
Just one. We've already given them two. So this is really three, but you can only give one more.
Ooh, that's a huge, I don't know. I'm torn, to be honest with you.
Flip a coin then, Glenn. Flip a coin.
I love the book Rework. And if you haven't read that before, it's called Rework. And it's basically, it's a number one bestseller. And it's by Jason Fried and David Heimer Hansen. If you haven't read it, it's a must read. Rework.
What makes it so special?
It basically makes you look at everything differently the way you run your business operations. You know, why are we still writing resumes? Why aren't we doing something differently? You know, we look at resumes as like, oh, look at this guy does on resume. Look at this guy does on resume. When actually you should be looking up and see what that person actually did before. You know, why are we still writing up strategic plans when they're outdated, you know, 6 months from now? You know, and why aren't we going back and looking those over? So Rework just totally looks at the complete different business side of it and totally awakened me on to say, why are we doing so many things the old way? How can we do it differently? And that's why it really captivated me.
Oh, that's interesting. And, you know, I read a book with my group coaching masterminds called The 12-Week Year. And part of the reason that idea was created was the business plan was too slow and it wasn't agile, which I know is something that you care about, being agile and adaptive. And so he wanted to challenge his business operators to accomplish more in 12 weeks than they normally would in a single year. Mm-hmm. And it's just like getting very hyper-focused on one goal and tracking it vigorously, I guess, over 12 weeks. And, you know, my people love that book. We created an ideal week. We started tracking our goals. A friend of mine created a spreadsheet in Excel so you can say, here's my goal. Here's the tactics I need to accomplish during the week to accomplish that goal. And it gives you, you know, a nice percentage that, and according to the author there, if you're hitting over 85% of your goals each week, you're going to have a productive quarter. And it's been phenomenal for people.
Wow, that sounds like a great read. The other book I was going to mention was Meetings Suck. I don't know if you've heard that one at all.
No, but I know it's true.
But it talks about the overall complexity of how the meetings that we run is not necessarily the meeting that's the problem, it's us. And it's a short read. You'll bang it out in a couple hours, but you'll pretty much tab every page there was. And it's very similar to that. You're talking about your goals. You're talking about why you set up things and how can you do better the organization. So check that one out too. I had to throw it in there.
That's good stuff. And, you know, we magically grew that list from 1 to 5 pretty quickly. So that's some talent right there. With Meeting Suck, did that influence you in how you run your meetings?
Oh, yes. Because you know what? How many meetings have you sat in or have been the same way for years? And I looked at it from the lens of being a new superintendent or CEO or whatever you'd like to call that position, you know, how could I do it differently? How do I get more voice involved? Or is it an informal meeting? Is it a discussion meeting? Or is it, you know, this has to happen kind of meeting? And you break it down and you look at the people that you invite to your meeting. Do they need to be there? And if they don't need to be there, don't invite them, you know, because there's nothing worse than telling somebody they have to be there and they cannot contribute anything to that meeting. So, you know, too often we just actually hold a meeting because we want to have a meeting to talk about another meeting that we're going to do a strategic plan or we're going to make a different action on. And then once we say we're going to have it, we're going to do something, we have to have another meeting. It just drives me insane. Why can't you just stop talking and get the job done, you know, instead of trying to break it down so much? Because so many times people want to do theory over practice, when sometimes practice over theory is what matters most, you know. So you have to look at it from that lens of how do we get everybody involved that need to be involved and respect them, you know. And you think about all the time you wasted in the meeting, how much money was wasted, how much time and energy was wasted on something that could have been used elsewhere, you know. So you look at the overall complexity of the organization that's so desperately needed that they could have been out there instead of just sitting there twiddling their thumbs, looking at you and daydreaming.
That's good. Glenn, what do you do for fun besides what your four-year-old tells you?
What my wife tells me. I love being with my family. I absolutely love playing with my son and playing with my wife. My wife and I, before my son was born, we used to travel a lot. And now that he's born and he's getting older, so we're going to start traveling more, hopefully. You know, I live out in the middle of the Pine Barrens, which is the Federal Reserve, State Reserve area that you cannot build on in down in South Jersey. So I love being outdoors, you know, love being on the water, love being outside with my son and just appreciating life itself. You know, obviously reading books, and I'm a huge sports fan. So anything with sports, particularly soccer, I could watch for hours, and I'd be a very happy camper as well.
What's the best place you visited if you love to travel so much?
Ooh, all right. So it depends on what type of travel you're going on, but one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen is Capri, Italy, and simply majestic there. And recently, another one was Alaska. If you haven't had a chance to get out there, definitely do that. China, I've been all over the Mediterranean, but Capri, Italy is just something of like a fairy tale. Anyway. It just looks fake.
Wow.
You know, kind of a deal.
Sounds beautiful. Glenn, if you could be automatically good at something, what would it be?
Ooh, that's a better question than before. Automatically good at something. I think it would be being the best possible father and husband. You know, and I say that because one of the hardest things that we have in this profession is balance. And, you know, I stretch myself so thin sometimes that I look back home and say, man, I wish I was home right now with them, or I wish I was, you know, doing something for my son. And, you know, so if I could be better at that, I'd be a very happy man. You know, not saying that I'm, you know, I'm a good father. Obviously, I want to be better and a better husband. But, you know, I look at those two and they just deserve, you know, so much more, you know, what they do every single day for me, supporting me. So if I could be a better husband and better father, that's all I'd want to be.
What message, Glenn, would you put on all school marquees across our nation if you could do that for just one day?
I think it would have to be original. You know, we as students appreciate understanding that we are human beings. We are trying to figure out who we are. And we have a right to be original in that regard. And we have a right to respect others of who they are. You know, so we can make mistakes and we can continue to learn from our mistakes and we can learn from our iterations. And at the same time, we're remaining curious and we're not judgmental to others.
Glenn, you've made it. I'm so proud of you. It's the last question. You're building the school from the ground up. You're not limited by the budget or resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school? And what would be your top three priorities?
Well, first and foremost, my number one priority, like I mentioned before, is trying to design a school for the overall experience that the kids and the staff we want to achieve. So I would love to see a school that, like I mentioned earlier, you are appreciated for who you are and your individuality, your originality, and it speaks volumes. And we want these kids to be design thinking. So first and foremost, we have design thinking. So we'd be doing it through an empathetic approach on how to better the lives of others. We would appreciate, you know, our own selves, and for the most part, it'd be standard base graded and ungraded. you know, for the fact that we would allow kids to have this freedom to understand the different iterations to show the world, you know, what they can truly make if given a chance to break free from rubrics and break free from standardized tests, that they could demonstrate so much more than what they're really capable of.
Glenn, thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Do you have any parting words of advice, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yes, I'm currently on Twitter at Glenn R, GlennR1809. I'm also on Medium as a blog to supplement Glenn Robbins. I'm also another blog is The Connected Lead Learner. Just Google that, Connected Lead Learner. And feel free to reach out to me at GlennR1809. That's also my email address as well through Gmail.
Fantastic. Well, Better Leaders, thank you for investing in yourself today by listening to this podcast. Remember that life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader. Today's podcast was brought to you by Daniel and Glenn. Be better starting today by heading over to betterleadersbetterschools.com and type Glenn in the search bar, and the show notes page will pop up where you'll get the highlights of today's episode, links to all the resources, and the best way to connect. Glenn, thanks again for sharing your leadership insights and helping the better leaders be better.
Thank you.
Better Leaders, thank you for joining us on the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. Visit us at betterleadersbetterschools.com, a blog and podcast made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Have you gotten value from today's show? Help me reach even more listeners by leaving a 5-star rating and review. Click the podcast artwork and press the Show Some Love link to leave an honest rating and review. A long, long time ago in a galaxy far away, patrons would sponsor artists to create something the patron valued. Would you consider becoming a patron of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast? If you found this podcast valuable, if the show has pushed your thinking about leadership, and if you've benefited in any way, then I would be honored if you would become a sponsor. Sponsorship is easy. Head over to patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes to become a patron for as little as $1 a month. If you pledge 10 bucks a month, I'll send you one of my favorite leadership books every other month. That's patreon.com/better or click the link in the show notes. Do you have a question or need some leadership advice? I want to connect with you. I read every email, tweet, snap that's sent to me. Links are in the show notes to connect via email and social media. Better Leaders, Better Schools is a proud member of the Edu Podcast Network. Podcast for educators, podcast by educators. You can listen to more great education podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.